Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Does this thing where I grab my wrists and like pin them to the back seat of my car, and I was like, I'm dead. I'm like, done for. It was so hot.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we have the People's Princess Parvati on the podcast. And you will notice when I get a little nervous and very excited, I abbreviate even more than I should. Sarah, enjoy that. For those of you who don't know who Parvati is, she is a four-time Survivor player, winner of season 16, and recently was a huge hit on the show Traitors, which we all just lapped up. If you don't know what Parvati does now outside of television, she is a yoga and meditation teacher. She teaches a course that is really helpful for us queers about living authentically and not being people pleasers. So she gives some really, really deep truths about that I think you'll enjoy. Also, last week's bonus episode on how to make gay friends was a big hit, and I want to thank my husband Matt for coming on to the Patreon. And speaking of bonus episodes, today's big. Parvati is on the pod, and the first ever gay-ass sex diary is live. As a special treat, you'll be able to hear a huge chunk of that episode at the end of this, and for the full, raw, and uncut Megillah, go to the Patreon and you will hear from the gay man living in Brooklyn who I interviewed. He not only gives delicious stories about fucking in the gym showers, but also about the time that he found out he was being catfished while inside the catfish. So many stories. You do not want to miss that. It is at patreon.com/gayasspodcast, and all of it is $5 a month. But we're going to get into this episode with Parvati. Stay tuned for lots of talk about the traitors of it all, Parvati's incredibly talented and sexy partner, Mae Martin, and a character actress answer for the gauges. Parvati is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. And Parvati, you are here. You are queer. And if I may be so cavalier, you look divine, delish, and divoon. So thrilled you're here.
Oh my God. Wow. Thank you. I am here. I am so queer. My hair is doing some big ass hair right now. I feel like I grew up in Georgia, but I feel like I'm from Texas right now.
You went a little down south. Are you wearing a bump it right now?
Oh my God, bump it. Yes, please. Send me some bump it.
We love a bump it. Okay, so just so you know, I have quite a docket of questions, but the first question before we get into, of course, the traitors of it all, of course, your herstory, we have to talk about the reason why you have whiplash. Parvati, are you okay?
No, I'm really not okay. On Thursday night, I got a Rolf. Do you ever get Rolfed?
Not since college. I'm kidding. I don't know what that is. What is Rolf? What is Rolf?
It's a kind of body work that's like deep tissue, but very targeted deep tissue. It's Ooh. Like myofascial release.
Sure, sure.
I've been
sure.
doing this for a couple years and it's been life-changing. Very helpful. So I go on Thursday and I get myself a Rolf by my amazing Rolfer named Danielle. And then I'm feeling great and I head out to Bad Bunny and I really go for it, I guess, because I wake up the next morning and I cannot move my head. My neck hurts so bad. I can't lift my head up. It feels like too weak to lift up on its own. So I'm like using my hands to lift up my head and turning, and I'm in agony.
Instead of the weight of the world, you have the weight of Bad Bunny sitting on your fucking shoulders.
Benito.
Do you, now this is a controversial, not to get political so early, but do you have a political statement about chiropractors?
I have a former client who is a chiropractor, And she gave us all adjustments on a retreat once, and it was pretty great. Okay. But otherwise, I don't subscribe to chiropractors. Like, I'm not going to go and make an appointment and go to the chiropractor.
Well, I watched the reason why what's it called? The Ralphing? The Ralphing reminds me of the deep dives that go into TikTok of watching hot male chiropractors just blow people's backs out. And I've heard from multiple neurologists that some chiropractry is no bueno, but this myofascial release of it all, it just all sounds, I love watching people's bodies relax. Sorry.
Guilty. Sue me.
Guilty.
Wait, I don't like someone contorting my neck and like my joints. I feel like that's a treacherous.
Well, that's the thing. They say the neck thing is what you got to be very careful of. I think a lot of the other stuff is okay, but like you're watching people straps to chins and then pulling. I know it's not.
No. I'm not going to do that. I'm not into that. No.
I know. Well,
but the rolling is just like a massage.
Well, we are going to talk about a lot of the things you do outside of being a television darling because, sweetie pie, this website you have with all of your courses and the coachings of it all, it is speaking my lang. Before I talk about the course that I need to grill you on, is can we give a shout out to our dear sexy friend Jesse who connected us? I just want to say, Jesse, you are gorgeous, you are a mensch, and I'm thrilled that you made this happen.
He's a dreamy dude. Do people know who Jesse is? He's the casting director for Survivor. He's kind of a big shot.
He's a big shot, and I literally became friends with him just in a random social circ, and I posted a picture of him to my Instagram story just being like, this is Jesse with my cute dog, and the amount of men who slid into my DMs hoping that he would suffocate them. Just not a short list, Parvati. Not a short list. But yeah, no, Jesse, big deal, big friend of the pod. And the reason why I want to bring up this coaching, you have... Before we get into the rest, you have this How Villains Are Made course, and talking about the releasing of the trauma with this myofascia stuff we're getting into, you have something that it seems like you have released that I need advice on. In this How Villains Are Made course, you says it basically helps people learn how to set strong boundaries, be unapologetic, and embrace your whole sexy, imperfect, messy self. In fact, you yourself posted a delicious meme where instead of John from The Traitor saying poverty could very well be a duchess of deception, you replaced it with could very well be a recovered people pleaser who learned that it's safe to be disliked. Parvati, when did you get to this point, and help me do that for myself, please?
It was really through the process of my divorce.
Interesting.
That's how I got here, because women who, you know, we have kids, we're married in a heterosexual, monogamous marriage, traditional style, it is the task of a lifetime to be okay with dissolving a family.
Yeah.
You know, to be like, okay, I'm going to make this choice because this isn't working for me. To put a woman who's a mother, a new mother, to put herself first is not something we're taught to do.
Yeah.
And to even assert that she has needs in general is just like a Herculean task, because our bodies are built for this baby. Once we have the baby, if you're breastfeeding, the baby belongs on you. You're keeping it alive. So as a mom, I was just constantly sacrificing myself and my needs, shower, food, et cetera, like didn't happen for many, many months.
Yeah.
Maybe, dare I say, years, but I went into Survivor in the middle of that, like a lunatic. So yeah, just through the process of being like, okay, I am going to end this marriage. I am going to file for divorce. I am going to lose the tribe that I have, you know, created and established. I'm going to be the bad guy here. And I had to really walk through that process. And it was so healing for me, because when I competed on Survivor in the early years, I was vilified. I even labeled the villain on Heroes versus Villains. And I was like, wait, am I a bad person? So after that, I did a lot of work to prove that I was a good person. I was like trying to redeem myself in the eyes of the public. I write about all of this in my book that I'm working on, my memoir that will be published summer 2025 with Random House.
Fuck yeah.
So we'll dive deeper into it, but just for that kind of the snapshot. Yeah, that's how I did it. I just realized you're going to be the villain in someone's story no matter what, no matter how hard you try. People aren't going to like you. And if you spend your life trying to be liked by everyone, you're going to lose yourself.
Yeah, because that I think I also was conditioned to be a people pleaser growing up, and I will have a pang of anxiety if I feel like I have either let someone down or have said something that would piss someone off. There's like a world-ending feeling that comes when the people pleaser feels like someone is upset with you. Was there a process that helped you realize that the world wasn't ending?
Yeah, it was starting to build my tolerance for that discomfort that you're talking about.
Mm.
So you have to build the capacity of your nervous system to tolerate threat. Because if you're a people pleaser, then fawning or pleasing is one of your survival strategies.
Ooh.
And if you feel disliked, your body can go into defense mode. I gotta survive this. This isn't safe. So you'll feel the tightening, the anxiety, the fear, the worry, the doubt. I gotta make this better. I gotta fix this. I gotta do more. Yeah. I gotta be happier or shinier or more likable. So if you can have the discomfort, experience, set the boundary, experience the discomfort, tolerate it, go for a walk, whatever, call a friend, whatever you need to help build your space inside that you can hold that without reacting to it, then you start to get better and better and better at setting boundaries. Yeah. It gets easier and easier.
It's like a muscle. It's like the exercise. Well, that it's such good advice. And I think it's also interesting that you bring up the divorce of it all, because really putting you through the ringer of being villainized, especially by like a world that says you're not supposed to take care of yourself. There's a quote you told The Advocate that really resonated with me. You said, "Going through my divorce really shattered a bunch of paradigms for me. It made me much more open-minded in many ways and available to very new and different possibilities in my life, and I'm very grateful that I've had that experience." Is it at all informed by the queerness of it all? Because what struck me was going from a straight marriage to this now world of queerness, queerity. Was there any sort of like freedom? I think I'm just projecting to you that I felt like when I came out and then started this very queer podcast, to like go from making myself smaller for a straight world, then exploding as this loud queer person, I feel like I'm sort of projecting that onto the divorce of it all for you. Is that at all a part of your journey of the openness of the queer world?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Like, you can't not be more expansive when you're in a queer relationship, I think, or especially when you've tried both.
Yeah.
Like, for me, being in the straight world, it was a very contained way to operate for me, where I had to disregard and disown certain fantasies I'd had or desires that I'd had, because I'd committed to this person and I'd committed to this marriage. Mm-hmm. And inside of the marriage, there wasn't any space for anything beyond that. And I'd had conversations, but it wasn't part of the dynamic with the two of us. So yeah. Once I was out of that marriage, there was so much freedom in my kingdom, and I had so much fun. And I was dating men, and I was very underwhelmed by the men that I was meeting and dating. And I was like, well, why not open it up to women? So I had already kind of exploded out of my cage or container in a way, and it mentally was prepared to start, you know, exploring. And then I met May, and it was like instant chemistry and sparkles and really fun. And I was like, oh, this is undeniable. I'm so into this.
Well, I'm not going to lie. When I saw a 0.5-second glimpse of May saying goodbye to you this morning, I got a flutter in my stomach, and I am a Kinsey 10, whatever that might be. But like, May Martin transcends any sort of box of what we should or shouldn't be attracted to. I think Mae Martin is, you and Mae together are such a stunning couple. In fact, you posted, were he, like, all these outlets were like,
Poverty comes out as queer with New Year's post.
We're here. We're queer. Happy New Year. Come on now. We love a dramatic. We love a dramatic headline. We love a press release. We love making our mark. You also said, I usually don't go so Meredith Vieira, so Barbara Walters with the quotes, but you have so many good quotes. I'm so sorry. I keep having to say them. Another quote you said, I'm just really happy and this relationship has a healthy emotional, physical, and spiritual connection. You said connection. It's healthier than any relationship I've ever been in my life. I tell all my friends to be queer. Parvati, you're doing the queer agenda. We're converting.
call me a Mormon. I'm like going for it.
Yeah, you're knocking on doors. Have you tried dating a gorgeous non-binary comedian?
Here's your rainbow flag.
Yeah. First of all, mazels on the relation. Mazels on being a part of this gorgeous queer community. And if I, Eric Williams, can say that I'm a part of a community that Parvati is in, that is a win for me. And that is why I'm going to ask you, Parvati, the famous podcast question, which is, whose fault is it that you're queer? Who do we blame, babe?
We blame May. This is May's fault completely. And May, it's so funny because May does this. May is like a gateway for straight women who just like fall for May. And then it's all of a sudden like, I guess I'm not straight after all. You know what's really funny, Eric? NBC sent me a questionnaire around when Traitors was releasing, and it was like it was like a publicity questionnaire, like, how are we gonna kind of align you with press opportunities and stuff? So there were drop downs. Menus in this questionnaire, and one was LGBTQ, like, how do you identify?
Yeah.
And I was like, it was like ally or I'm LGBTQ. And I was like, I'm an ally. Makeup. Babe, hate to break it to you, but you are not an ally. And that it was wild because I like didn't see myself as queer enough to like put it in the job, even though I had been in a relationship with May for like months by this point.
Wow.
I was like, oh my, because it feels so normal to me. I was like, I'm not different. I'm me, but I guess I am different. I'm like, now I am queer. Yeah. And then I just got really excited about it.
Well, that's the best reaction to have, by the way. Can you imagine you're like devastated? No, the best. Yeah. Fuck. And I also like talking about May being this converter. I'm just picturing them like taking an eraser, erasing your ally box, and then putting the darkest X through queer, and then the scary music sounds, and this is your queer origin story, hun. Welcome to the tribe. Do you remember growing up having any, dare I say, lesbianic tendencies? I mean, we know you're an outdoors girl. We know, did you wear a Birkenstock? Like, can you give us any, were there any signs?
Okay. I mean, I have this picture on my bulletin board. I'm just going to pull it off for you so you can see it. This, guess which one is me?
I think I can tell.
Just like I fucking the camera next to my hot chick girlfriend. I was like 3 in that picture. I grew up in a commune. So I was like barefoot running around in the woods. It was a Hindu spiritual community. It was very goddess oriented, like Kali, dark goddesses, Durga, like all the Hindu greats.
Wow.
Ganesh, the elephant god. So it was like really kind of uncontained around who you could be, what kind of energy you could embody, men, women. It was sort of like, it was very kind of, there were undertones of sexy, dark sexuality. Like some of that was kind of, was always sort of woven into the fabric of the wisdom talks or whatever the guru would give in the evenings.
Has there been a documentary done about this?
No, but there really needs to be. And I have some friends who were there with me in childhood, and they have crazy stories. Mine's a bit more tame compared to theirs because my parents got us out when I was 9, like fully we were done. But some of my friends stayed and grew up there through high school and beyond. And that's another story for another time.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there will be a Netflix documentary about it because its guru was female, which is unique. around this time period, there were a lot of male gurus and cults and such. But anyway, yeah, I think, I mean, I always had girlfriends, like very close girlfriends, and my relationships with men were more superficial and more transactional, but deep, deep relationships with girlfriends. And apparently, I don't remember this, but my mom told me when she visited for Christmas, she was like, "Do you remember when I asked you if you were a lesbian?" And I was like, "No, actually." She's like, "You laughed about it," because I was just always into like flirting and playing games with guys. Like it was more power games. It never even entered my awareness, because I grew up in the South, and the paradigm in the South is the way to popularity and the way to power is to play the like Southern belle, debutante, charm, flirt. And it's always about getting male attention. So I just had a great time with my girlfriend, but I never thought beyond that in like a sexual way.
Right. In a way, you were almost like conditioned to think that the option was you get the attraction and the attention of the man, and then the friendship comes with the women, and that's sort of what is allowed or expected. But this is, was this like a Georgia cult? Do we use the C word?
So, no, the cult was in, you can use it. I think so. There was a lot of abuse of power and coercive control happening there. And it was very difficult for my parents to leave. I think that's kind of the hallmark of the cult, of a cult, is like it's hard to leave. So that was in Florida, and then we moved to Georgia.
Gotcha.
We assimilated to more like a standard American life in Georgia.
And well, since my in-laws are in Atlanta, where in Georgia did you move to?
Marietta, baby.
Baby. Okay. My in-laws are in Sandy Springs. A shout out. We love a Marietta. I was gay married in Atlanta, Georgia. So
you were a cutie.
Can you believe? Yeah, we
did
had
you go to City Hall?
We did. We got our license at the Fulton County. Boop, 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 boop. And then we had like a big old it was a gay wedding, but you know, it was still I'm actually starting to work on, it's not a poverty book, but I am starting to work with a book agent on this book. And part of what I want to, what I want to write about is I had this beautiful gay wedding, but I still think it was like sort of towards the end of our heteronormative chapter in a way. We moved to LA 6 months after, that's not true. The pandemic started 6 months after we got married. We moved to LA a couple years after that. And I think that now that we've been in LA, our queer lives have really exploded. And our wedding was beautiful. It was gay. We had a gorgeous lesbian DJ, like love. But there were still some, not as many queer people at the wedding that would have been there now. And I say all this to say, like, I think that our Atlanta wedding was beautiful. It was what we wanted. But if we were to get married now, it might be a little bit more of a queer-to-weirdo fest just because of the chapters we have in terms of embracing our queerness. Mm-hmm. But shout out to Atlanta. Shout out to, we had, you know, like 150 people there. It was the music that the lesbian DJ played was, you know, full club vibes. Matt's grandmother was like dancing, not realizing that she was playing a playlist where the songs would go into one another, and she only wanted to dance for one song. And so 10 minutes later, she's like, "This is a long song."
Good for her. She's good still for her. It.
We love you, Gam. Anywho, this answer is great. I think that the cult of it all is huge. The Mae Martin of it all is huge. However, I know that you've talked about this before, but can you describe the first feeling of connecting with Mae? Like, what was it like to have our first either kiss, have our first either butterfly explode? Just the fireworks of a queer moment to me is, everyone remembers theirs, and I'm curious for what happened with you.
Oh, it's really cute. I actually DM'd Mae, and that's how we met. I slid into Mae's DMs and then went to their show, and Mae came out after to the seats and got, my sister and I were there and got us and was like, "Do we hug?" And so we hugged, and I was like, "Oh my God, I like this person." I was like nervous, you know, and that doesn't happen to me very often.
Yeah.
So then we go backstage and we're chatting, we're talking about Survivor, and Mae's friends are back there. And I was just like pretty, pretty smitten. And then I gave Mae a crystal. Like, what? I was Okay, it's a weird long story. I'm not going to get into it right now, but I ended up giving me a crystal. So it was like, I feel like I maybe cast a little bit of a spell with that.
Yeah.
And then later we were just kept DMing each other. And then maybe a week later, we went out and I called my friends, my lesbian friends who live in New York. And I said, is this a date? Like, we're going out. I don't know. Like, it's not explicitly a date. Is this like just a hangout? Because I know Maze is a Survivor fan and I'm a fan of their comedy, but obviously interested. And they were like, yeah, we think it's a date, but if it's not, like, fine. But if it is, watch out, because these relationships move at light speed.
That's what I hear.
And I was like, okay, whatever. And then it was definitely a date. It was like a 9-hour date. And by the end of it, I was like, so what's, you know, we're just like cuddling in a bar, booth in a bar. And May's friend had been with us for a part of the evening and May's friend had left. Uh-huh. So then it was just the two of us and it was late. And I was like, okay, let's go. And I'm driving May back to their place and he's like, do you want to come in? And I'm like, no, I don't think so. Like, I'm not going to come in right now. And then we kissed in my car and I melted. I melted. I mean, like, does this thing where they grab my wrist and like pin them to the backseat of my car. And I was like, I'm dead. I'm like,
Jesus,
done for. It was so hot. It was the hottest kiss I've ever had. We were both just into it.
Oh my God. I did not make out with Mae Martin, but I feel like I did. There's something I'm telling you, the first kiss of an explosive chemistronic murmurment, there's otherworldly. It is otherworldly, and I'm so happy for you, and I just feel the butterflies myself. I don't know if it's like I'm a gay empath, I'm just horny, but huge.
Aren't we all?
Truly. Well, I'm going to get into some traitors discourse, if that's okay with you, because I have some questions.
Let's do.
Obviously, there was a lot of discussion about your stunning fashion, the headbands, and you posted on Instagram that you wanted to be Blair Waldorf, and your stylist, Lauren Martin, made it happen. So question, did your stylist supply the headbands, or was that from your personal claws?
No, I don't own a single headband. I mean, now I do. I have a whole full closet of them. But before that, I had zero. But Lauren sent me this board with these different looks. And I was like, yeah, Blair wears headbands. But I saw the one with the pearls and I was like, that headband is out of control. It's completely nuts. It's totally crazy. It's like, I would never wear that in my real life. But I had to do it. And I was like, Lauren, we need headbands for every outfit.
Yeah. You have
to.
And
then she pulled some more headbands. Originally, she had the pearly one and then the black sparkly one. And I was like, let's get some more headbands going. I need like the red leather top knot headband.
Oh my God.
And then I did have one in my personal collection, the predatory headband, the leopard print.
Yeah.
From my personal collection.
The predatory headband. Did you have to, you have to pack a lot of outfits when you're shooting this show. How many suitcases did you have to pack and bring to the airport hotel that you stayed at instead of the castle?
Oh my God. I don't know what you're talking about. As an airport hotel? Who would ever stay there?
Sorry.
Ugh, low rent. Pedro would not stay at an airport hotel. Okay. I brought not enough suitcases. I brought one giant suitcase and half of it was full of crystals and tarot cards and a yoga mat. I was like, what am I doing? Like on Survivor, you have one outfit, you know? So I'm like coming from the world of Survivor and thinking, well, I'm never going to get voted off. So I don't bring anything else when I go on Survivor. I just bring my one outfit and then I'm screwed if I'm on the jury. But so for traders, I was like, okay, I'm ready. I got my whole suitcase packed full of my stuff, all my boots, my coats. I was terrified it was going to be freezing.
Yeah.
So I went to my friend's house and borrowed floor length wool coats, multiple. I had multiple of those in my suitcase. I wore one. I did not have enough outfits. I had four outfits. When I got there, I was like, where's all my clothes? So thank God they have a stylist who had like racks of clothes. And I was like, oh, you're saving my life because I would have to rewear my outfit.
Yeah, we see you in the same thing every episode.
So that's why like I feel like kind of as the show went on, my outfits got less and less involved. They were just sort of like, all right, I'll throw this on now.
Off the rack.
But in the beginning, I really brought it.
Wait, you did. And by the way, you gave a little bit of an Easter egg. Did can you say where Phaedra stayed or no?
No, Phaedra stayed with all of us. We all stayed in the same spot.
So because the Queen Phaedra's name has come up, seeing you work with her on the show, I mean, she is mother, as they say. How did you feel about Housewives before the show? What was your relation to that world?
No, I don't really watch Housewives.
Yeah.
I don't watch that much reality TV. I mostly watch cult documentaries and creepy psychological thrillers, like The Handmaid's Tale.
Of course.
Dark stuff. But no, I haven't been watching Housewives. Like back in the day, I watched like Jersey Shore in the Real World. So I knew Trishelle and I knew CT from the Real World. And I knew Sandra, obviously, but I didn't really know anyone else. Max from Dancing with the Stars. I knew who he was. I was so pumped to see Max. And then I think he thought I was hitting on him. So he was like real wary of me.
You know, sometimes, and not to sass him because he is, I'm sure, a mensch and a great guy. But sometimes when you're like a hot dancer, I think you probably are often conditioned to think people are hitting on you when sometimes we just want to break bread.
We just want to get spun around a little bit by a fountain.
Sue me to be
dip me low,
but don't give me whiplash like Bad Bunny.
Don't give me whiplash. I'm still recovering.
Yeah,
I can't believe I gave myself whiplash.
We got to give you a Ralph appointment yesterday. When Phaedra was sort of ripping into Dan during the reunion, saying like he's a piece of shit, what was Dan's energy while Phaedra was ripping into him?
And Dan was checked out. He wants very much to be liked. He plays the games that he plays in an impersonal way. Mm-hmm. So he makes his moves, and his moves are to get rid of the people who he feels threatened by. And then I think he wasn't expecting the backlash from Johnny Bananas and from Phaedra. Yeah. And they really came at him very hard. And I think he's bummed about it. I think he feels really bad and he wishes that things could be different, but they're not amenable to being friends.
Well, I think that's also the interesting thing watching is the gamers versus the reality. Like, what do we call that? The gamers versus the whatever.
The Bravo babe.
Oh, the Bravo Lebs. The Bravo Lebs. Like, there is a different. I think Dan's sort of keeping it non-personal was more of the gamer vibe. And the Housewives were like, honey, this is my personhood.
Right, exactly. Phaedra got really mad about it. I think, and it's also because there were unspoken assumptions and expectations, and Phaedra assumed that the traitors would be loyal to each other, and Dan did not.
It's also interesting with knowing Phaedra, you and Peter did that Bumble ad that recently came up. Obviously, Peter was a hard competitor. Is Peter a dick?
Wait, what's that face? I feel like you want to answer this question. You want to answer.
Thank you for pulling the microphone back. You know what it is? I think it's because I have straight man trauma. And so I'm sometimes like, okay, he is a very confident man, which already I have to keep alert on, because when you have a confident straight man, depending on what factory he was processed through of straightness, either I'm going to be someone that he's not going to be very nice to, or he was brought up right and I'm going to fall in love with him. So I think I'm trying to decide if I'm going to be like, oh, you're a dick that I need to be wary of, or if I'm going to fantasize about marrying you knowing it could never happen.
Well, I can't make that choice for you. I can give you a few breadcrumbs of information, and then you will have to put it through your processor and decide.
Okay, I can do that.
Okay, I will say that Peter is one of probably the most sincere human beings I have ever met. He cares very deeply about understanding and being right, and he wants to know, and he wants to do the right thing, and he really wants people to like him. I think he was not well liked after his season of The Bachelor, or there was some drama. And there was, I didn't watch the season, so I don't really know. But that's sort of the vibe I picked up. So I felt like his faithfuls, like King of the Faithfuls act that he played on Traitors was sort of a redemption story for him. It's why
Voice
he didn't want
to
become a traitor and turn to like the skeezy, lying dark side with us, where it was way more fun, by the way. And I think he regrets that decision.
I mean, I don't
very
disagree.
Much regrets it.
I don't disagree.
I know. And watching it play out, he's like, maybe I took it too far with my bloodhound Scooby-Doo act. But no, he's a sweet guy. He really is. And I think he cares a lot about people. And he had a big party at the end of the reunion and everybody came. I couldn't go. I had my daughter and she was being extra. So I stayed home that night. Mm. But yeah, he like...
You answered he, like, it. You answered
he's kinda,
it.
He's kind of... A man about town does his little thing.
No, you've already changed my thinking. I think like sometimes I want to paint the straight man as the bad guy because it's like it confirms, you know, certain experiences I had growing up. But like, listen, if the guy cares a lot, I also love to see a straight man who can talk about his feelings and care for people and be the empath and boop boop boop. So like,
I think he does.
Props to Peter for that. Well, and I know that Peter and Ekin-Su came off as like the couple of the season. Did you notice flirting during filming?
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, they had
and
electricity.
Then I felt bad killing Ekin-Su because there was a blossoming romance. And I was like, shoot, I'm nipping this in the bud. I didn't want to do that, but she was the only one who would drink the chalice, so I had to do what I had to do.
Yeah, that was stressful. That was, but again, you rose to the occasion. That is, does the timing of the traitors, I'm just picturing, first of all, I'm thinking about like the chalice. It seems like it had to take like hours for you to get someone to drink that chalice. And then my mind goes to, do you remember watching the final episode where they're like trying to like go down the mountain to get towards the ship to like put the sail up to win the whole thing? They say they had like 2 minutes left and that had to have taken a full 3 calendar hours. I think the timing of the traitors, I like that they sort of, it's the suspension of disbelief, I think is so beautiful.
I think you have to have that. I mean, I honestly don't even know. And I participated in those challenges. Right. They will fall on their sword telling us, yes, that was 45 minutes. And I'm like, that felt like 7 hours. And they're like, nope, 45 minutes. We timed it.
Like, well, just like your Florida cult, we just have to take the pill and believe.
Just believe.
Just believe. What believe. Song is that? Just believe.
Just believe.
That's an a Parody original.
Disney? Yeah.
Before we move on to the next topic, I do think, as this is a gay-ass podcast, I found it really interesting watching Peppermint's journey on the show. Peppermint did That's a Gay-Ass Podcast at the end of our first year, so it was kind of amazing to see her on the show. When she talked during the reunion about feeling like she was singled out as being the most different, what was the energy like during the reunion filming when she was describing her experience?
Everyone was listening and validating her.
We
all agreed it was so crappy the way that she was banished. It was just everyone was in a state of paranoia, complete chaos. She was the loudest and there was some drama happening with her already. So it was just like, okay, easy target, I guess. You know, it's just was really unfortunate that it happened that way. And I think we all really heard her because she's right. You know, it is important to have representation for people in this community, people who are trans, especially with what's going on in the state of the world, to show that trans people are amazing and wonderful and fun and vibrant. And Peppermint is such a beautiful example of what a trans person is in their full glory. So I think it was just like, yeah, we hear you. This is necessary and we validate.
Well, I think also I really commend Trishel for recently going on Watch What Happens Live and basically talking about the unlearning that she is doing and kind of noticing what her biases were. Because I think that Trishel did come off as a bit of an unlikable character in that moment because of the singling out. And so I think that's, she is doing the best thing that she can do, which is validate Peppermint's experience and then look within as to why Trishel reacted in that way. So, I mean, was your experience filming with Trishel, was it, and knowing a bit about her experience on television, did you feel any certain type of way about her while you were filming with Trishel?
No, I thought she was fine. I didn't think that she was, that her behavior was inappropriate. I think she was just in a pressure cooker situation where she felt really scared and was very reactive.
Yeah.
And very loud in her reactivity. And I mean, by later on in the game, people were like, oh, she was so wrong about Peppermint right off the bat, which I think really took a hit on her credibility. So throughout the rest of the game, her voice didn't carry much weight.
That tracks. Well, it's, as you know, a fucking hit of a show, and you were so great on it. And I've known you from Survivor, but the Traitors plus Survivor plus Queerness, this, I just want to say mazels. And because you were on That's a Gay Ass podcast, I'm contractually obligated to ask you the next podcast question, which is, Parvati, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
One character actress?
Dive into your, what is your pop culture relation? Like, you're growing up in this, like, hippy-dippy environment. You moved to Georgia. Now you're this, like, yogi, crystal, TV competitor. Like, what, is there a female actress that you see, if you were to see them on the street, and you would get very excited to see? For me, like, if I saw Diane Keaton, which I have, huge.
Oh my God, I have as well. Wait, and she's amazing. You know, who would it be where I would lose my mind? Well, I was wildly in love with Angelina Jolie back in the day. And I met her when I first moved to LA because I was working for a PR firm. And I brought diamonds to her in her hotel room at the Bel Air Hotel. She was eating a steak. And she was like, which ones do you like better, the squares or the rounds? And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. I'm like melted into the floor. I was so in love with her. And I told her which ones I liked, and she wore them to the premiere. And I was like, she loves me. We're in love.
She probably did. And I, like, again, very far on the spectrum of gay man, but thinking about you and Angelina Jolie with just her diamonds on and nothing else.
Oh, yes, please. But I also really loved Alan Cumming because I watched Romy and Michelle's high school reunion religiously.
By the way, Alan Cumming is a character actress, and I think we need to save Alan.
I think we got to save Alan because I want to go back and do Traitors again later, too. So if we don't have the host de jour, what will we do?
What are we going to do? Yeah, like, talk about fashions. Talk about suitcases. Talk about Alan Cumming. The queer deliciousness of Alan walking in every day. Do you know who else also added to the queerness, if I may go back, is Kate Chastain walking back through the doors. Yes, a straight woman, I think. But there's a certain, I mean, when you're on Below Deck that many seasons, you're gay. How did you feel seeing Kate come into the competition?
Oh my, it was such a surprise. But in our contracts, there was a line that said, people can come in at any point in time in the game. And I was like, we're halfway through. I bet someone's coming. I thought they would bring someone back from the cast who'd been murdered or something or banished. So I was really surprised to see Kate walk through those doors. And then I was like, shoot, Kate. She's really hard to read. She didn't care at all about the game last time. And she comes and sits at the round table and just starts pointing fingers at people and defending Phaedra and the other housewives. And I'm like, God, okay, well, this is going to be difficult for me. I tried to befriend her because I was a fan of hers from the previous season. And she goes, first thing she says to me, oh, you're the one who got that guy to give up the immunity necklace and then voted him out. Oh, I know exactly who you are. I'm watching out for you. And I was like, Kate, no.
That's a pretty good Kate, by the way. Oh, wait. You know what also mandatory for me to discuss really fast is a dear friend who you've also, you did his show and you were so good in it, was Johnny Sibley's Spill for Logo. Both of you came together with When in Doubt, Squint Pout. I think it's hopefully not too much to ask, but would you be so kind to give a gay ass squint pout?
Gay ass squint pout? Are you doing it?
I'm soaking wet. Sorry. I just had to clean up the spill. Talk about spill. My wooden chair is wilting. Thank
You're
you
gonna
for
need
that.
A new chair.
We're gonna need a new chair. Bring
gotcha.
In. Ugh, one day you'll have gas production. Okay, so Alan Cumming is who we have saved. The traitors of it all, thank you for all the information. Now, if we may have a quick survivor check-in, did you know that Sandra was doing the show before you arrived?
No, I didn't. And some of the cast had leaked, but it was like a big mess of who maybe potentially was on the season of Traitors. Sandra's name was not on it, and my name also was not on it, so she didn't know that I was going to be there, and we were both shocked and dismayed to see each other at the time because we'd had a feud, like a kind of like whatever, a silly feud, but a feud nonetheless. And we have not really been friends.
Yeah.
At all. Like she's in a different circle with survivor people than I am. So I was like, shoot, this is could be really bad.
I was impressed though with the way that you both carried yourselves in light of the feud and even after the show is aired too. Is the feud squashed?
Totally, yeah. Sandra and I are fine.
Good.
It's so silly. And it makes it's so much better, I think, for us to be on the same team, like working together. And, you know, we're not like strategizing with each other and calling each other every day, but yeah. We'll text. Sandra's hilarious. She's really funny. And like the way that she talks cracks me up. And even with her text, I'm like, I can't. So I'm really glad that we're friends now.
I love that so much.
We're enemies.
Thank goodness. Well, listen, yeah. Before we get into the final stretch of this interview, I just want to bring up a quote that you also said that I think really speaks to what this podcast tries to do, which is live in authenticity, get away from any shame we have. And you have a quote that says, when you know who you are and what you want and you bet on yourself, success is guaranteed. That really speaks to me as a queer person who has not only people pleasing, but also imposter syndrome. Can you shed some light on how the success of it all is guaranteed from the betting on yourself? Like, what can we do to bet on ourselves more, I think, is the question.
I think it really starts with knowing yourself first and knowing what you want, because sometimes we can be so disconnected from our bodies that we, like, our bodies are really what's giving us the information of what we want. Your body will open and lean towards something when you want it. It will usually close and contract and shut down when you don't want it. So starting to listen to your body is really helpful when you are trying to figure out, well, what do I actually want? And then betting on yourself is simply following that guidance. Mm. Just doing it, making the call, trying out for Survivor if that's what you want to do. Like going for, I don't know, the information that's coming through your guidance, conversations that you have with other people, if something they say kind of strikes and resonates for you, it's like, oh, curiosity. You're like, oh, I might be interested in that. Bet on yourself, follow through. You may not have the skill set at the start, but you can always develop it through the process of taking the action and trying.
Yeah.
So, and as you take the action and try for something, you will learn more about yourself. You'll become more confident in certain ways and you'll develop skills that you didn't have before. So that is winning.
Yeah.
Even if you don't win, like I didn't win Traitors, but I do feel like I won that experience because I had a really great time. I've met some amazing people. I've been able to do these kind of podcasts and share more of myself and my journey for the benefit of other people and use my voice in a way that I haven't been using it in the past. Yeah. And that is so fun for me. So it does feel like success.
100%.
So I guess if your definition of success is expansive enough and it's like growth, then you are going to be successful.
Well, by the way, I think what held me back for years was that fear of not being a quote unquote success from the jump and the fear of needing to improve my skills because I was so afraid of not being at the destination. But then once I think like I started to take the steps of just putting it out there and following what my body wanted, then I, like you're saying, the skills did get better. This podcast has grown. The other projects have grown. And I think that what you have said there really lands with me. And I think anybody listening, it really is inspiring. And I just am so grateful that you are using this platform from, of course, what could be considered a silly competitive reality show, but also like really living in your truth and helping others do the same. And I think that's something that I do not take lightly. And I think that that's what this podcast stands for, what you stand for. And it is just delish. And I want to thank you for continuing to spread the gospel.
Oh, it's a marriage of the minds.
Baby Parvati, this is unfortunately the end of the interview, but I'm going to ask you a final question I did not prep you on, which is, Parvati, if Mae Martin has made you queer, what is keeping you queer? What is the geekiest thing that you are leaning into today? Is it an actress, a sandwich, a pornography? What's doing it for you?
I need lists and lists of this. I am like really learning how to be queer.
Yeah.
I have this hilarious book. Okay. I'm not very romantic. And I was telling Mae about this. I'm like, I'm just learning how to be romantic because I've been on the receiving end as a straight woman. Usually I'm just like, okay, guys, like bring me the flowers, take me on the dates. Like yeah. I just would be very passive in that arena. And now I'm like in this relationship and Mae loves romance. He's very romantic, like notes and cards and gifts and things like that and massages. And I'm like, okay, this is a steep learning curve. I gotta really like go for it. So I'm asking my friends, I'm like, how do you be romantic? Learning how to do this. How do I do this? I feel like a child, like in elementary school, like buying chocolates for my crush. So my friends, like, get this book.
1001 Ways to Be Romantic. And the Y is a balloon. The O of romantic is an orange heart.
Number
it's the number one bestseller, honey.
1.6 million. I'm not alone in not knowing how to do this.
Well, if 1.6 million people are trying to find out over 1,000 ways to be romantic, then there's something in there that is... I'm sure you're going to nail.
No, it's so bad, though. I opened the book and it was like, okay, take your date to McDonald's and light some candles in the car. And I was like, wait, what?
The bar is low for these 1.6 million people who are buying. I was picturing like more cosmopolitan, put an ice cube in your vagine, but like that's just me.
Yeah, so I haven't really cracked the book very often, but I am... really working because this is like a fun growth edge for me.
Yeah.
To learn how to take the lead in the romance department. Like, get me some swag.
I'm sending you all the romantic vibes. I am so excited for your romantic journey. And Parvati, before we stop recording, can you tell the girls where to follow you and what you would like to plug?
Follow me at pshallow on Instagram. I really keep that pretty up to date and will post about courses that I'm leading, how villains are made, the course to help people stop people pleasing, set boundaries, become more confident, speaking their truth, really aligning your life with who you are and what you want. That's what the course is about. So if that appeals to you, go to my Instagram, click on the link in my bio, sign up for the course because we're starting April 6th, I think is the day that we launch the course.
Hell
yeah. It's a 6-week program and it's going to be really, really fun.
And by the way, I'm also going to link it in the description for the pod and follow Parvati, follow Gay Ass Podcast, and Parvati, a gosh darn joy. You're the best.
Oh my God, love you. That was so fun.
Love you, Mina. And now presenting the first ever Gay Ass Sex Diary called Gay Ass Sex. Feel free to tell the girls, what identifiers would you like to reveal?
I am a gay guy in his 30s that lives in Brooklyn.
Okay, not the borough too. So I have so many questions, but the first thing, you are right now calling in from a gym.
I am, yeah.
Because I myself have gym fantasies, steam room fantasies. Tell us, have you found yourself in a steam room fooling around, or is it not your jam?
No, that's definitely one of my jams, and that definitely happens, for sure.
Do you have a preference for what the actual things that happen? Is it just hand stuff, or do you ever go mouth or hole?
I feel like for mouth or hole, I usually prefer to move to a shower so there's privacy. My only big preference is I think part of the fun of it is being in there and not being sure if like the other guy is gay or if the other guy wants it. It's like honestly checking for consent, but in like a kind of verbal cue or like non-verbal cue sort of way.
Yeah.
That sort of song and dance.
When you do find yourself moving to the shower, do we get on our knees at the gym shower, or are we worried about bacterium?
I mean, the soap is right there to wash your knees after. I'm not a particularly germophobic person in general. I mean, I'm not like dirty, but like, I don't like, no, that doesn't really bother me.
I'm jealous. I'm so jealous. I wash my hands far too many times a day.
Okay.
So when you are pre-washing your knees, if you do want to do whole stuff, are you being penetrated or penetrating or both in these gym showers?
Well, in the showers, it's pretty rare because, like, obviously, like, it's like I just worked out, so it's not like someone's douched or like, and there's not really like lube. So it's happened, like, I've done both. I've been fucked and fucked in the showers, but it's been like a pretty rare occasion.
A special time and place.
Yeah.
For a gym fuck.
Also, kind of like, perfect stars aligning sort of thing.
Well, I want to commend you already on the sexy visuals of a gym. And before I ask other sex questions, I want to add some humanity to this. How do you feel about talking about sex in this way? Does it make you nervous? Are you excited by it? What's your state?
I'm kind of surprised at how nervous I am, to be honest. Oh. I wasn't I'm not a particularly shy person. But I think in general, I like keeping a little allure around sex and a little like mysteriousness. I dated a guy once who like, he and his friends talked about sex really, not openly is not the issue, but very like bluntly and matter of factly. And I was like, you talk about the guys you have sex with, like judges at a dog show. You know, like it had this like very sort of like criteria, like formulaic thing about it. And I find that like, deeply unsexy and deeply not horny. And so I think that's part of it is like, I'll talk to my best friends, my two best gay guy friends about sex, like pretty explicitly, but I think we do keep a little like allure around it. And I'm maybe nervous that I'm going to have to get down to too much brass tacks, but I'm excited as well. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I think the fun part of this type of interview is to follow our bliss and see what fun things we want. This is all about horny goodness. So I appreciate
it's also very foreign to me to, I guess it's foreign to me to do an interview where I'm anonymous. I keep on having to remind myself that no one's gonna know who I am.
No.
And if you figured out who I am, don't tell anyone.
Don't tell. Well, I totally agree and see the allure of it all, because while this is anonymous, I want to tell the listeners that the person who I'm looking at is a very gorgeous, sexy person who we don't know a lot about their sex life.
Thank
so
you.
This is a thrilling opportunity for me to ask another sex question. Anonymous gay man of Brooklyn, have you ever been to a sex party?
Yeah, I've been to a handful. I've been to both, like, explicitly, like, sex parties where that's the main thing, and then I've also been to, like, you know, the gay dance parties where there's, like, a sex room.
Like a dark room situation.
Yeah, a dark room situation, yeah. I've been to both of those.
Okay, so let's go into, I've actually personally never done, I mean, I'm not embarrassed, but I am a little embarrassed. I've never done a gay party and then gone, and then dark room. I know it's like a rite of passage, and I look forward to the time I get to have that Fire Island movie montage moment.
Yeah.
But when you're in the dark room, since you like this allure of the sex, do you find yourself empowered by the darkness or wallflower?
So I've been to them, but it's not my thing. I'm not anti it, but like, I don't find much excitement in like a true dark room where you don't know who you're touching. I get that. I think that, and I know that some guys love that. It's just not really my thing. I would much rather flirt and dance with someone on the dance floor and make out with them, and then maybe we go back there and hook up. Maybe. Yeah. Also, like, in dark rooms, there's a lot of, like, there's so many variables that sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, you know? Like, there's always the guys that want to watch you, and there's always the guys that want to, like, touch you, and sometimes that's fun, and then sometimes it's like, oh, this is actually a little too stimulating right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Then if we can go to a fun sex party vibe, do you feel free to share maybe a specific story of one you remember that was particularly enjoyable?
The first time I went was, like, so, I mean, you go into, like, a basement and you check your clothes, and then suddenly you're in, like, a room of, like, dozens of naked guys having sex. And it's, like, the rush of that the first time, and, like, the thrill and, like, the overwhelm of that, I don't know that the high of that first time can be, like, for me, was ever, like, reached, because then it's, yeah, like, you kind of get used to it. But I remember that first time being, like, I don't even think I could get hard initially, because I was so, like, just overwhelmed by it.
Oh, I've been there, too.
Yeah. There was one in Brooklyn I went to probably, like, 3 or 4 times, and then there was one I went to in Manhattan, like, once or twice. So I think in total I've been to, like, sex parties, like, 5 or 6 times. And I don't think any of them were bad experiences, and I definitely, like, had some fun at them, at all of them. I also went to them, like, I was in a relationship at the time, so there was times I went with a partner, and then there were times I went alone. And I do think I preferred going alone.
Okay.
But also, me and that partner aren't together anymore, so...
Do you think any part of the openness of your relationship led to it not working out, or was that sort of separate from what...
No, I think it was separate. I mean, I was with, like, I probably would have to give up my anonymity to get into the details of it, but, like, no, I think our relationship was... Like, I think we just grew apart. We were together for a long time, and we got together when we were young. But I think that, like, being open was one thing, and then going to a sex party together and, like, having sex in front of other people. And, like, also, that got really complicated, because there's also the dynamic of what happens when someone's into you but not your partner at a sex party. Or someone, you know what I mean? Or, like, your partner goes and, yeah, like, your partner tries to go hook up with someone and gets rejected, and then that person goes and tries to hook up with you. Like, that, those dynamics got really complicated really fast. So I think, like, after 1 or 2 times, I was like, this with a partner is not for me.
Did that happen? You don't say who was more desired, but did that happen more than one time?
Yes. It happened more than one time, and it happened in, like, yeah, it caused a lot of problems. So I think that, like, I mean, I don't think that's, like, what led to our breakup, but, like, I definitely think it was, like, a huge issue that came up.
Yeah, it didn't help the self-esteem of one of you.
No, not at all.
Do you subscribe to a position of top or bottom, or are you kind of a choose-your-own-adventure?
I'm fully verse. I think I would prefer to date someone who is a verse top than a verse bottom. I think bottoming is more important to me, but I love both. Happy to do it all.
I love that answer. When you bottom, do you prefer a specific type of lube?
No. I'm kind of easy with lube. I like that water-based doesn't stain. I think that's nice to not worry about. But I don't have, like, a hard line. I mean, I usually buy Swiss Army or gun oil, but I'm not, like, super, super particular.
Do you have a favorite position when bottoming?
Riding or missionary.
Which one is missionary? I never... Is it on your back? You're on your back?
On your back. Missionary's on your back, yeah.
Okay. And do you need to be eaten out before you get fucked, or is it not mandatory?
It's not mandatory, and in fact, the thing I prefer more is I really like getting fingered before I get fucked.
Interesting. Okay. And have you found most of the guys who do the fingering know what they're doing?
Not always, but I think someone who's good at fingering is going to be good at fucking, usually.
100%. I one time hooked up with a doctor, and honey, the anatomy...
Oh, doctors finger like no one else. It's crazy. I've had my fair share.
Yeah, I won't say I have had a fair share, but I've had a share of a doctor, and just divine. Where are you finding all these doctors?
I think it's only 2 doctors that I hooked up with. And actually, one is, to be fully transparent, one of them is a physician's assistant. But he's still great.
We're not gonna gatekeep the MD of our D's.
Yeah.
Wow. So when it comes to you getting fingered and fucking, can you describe the last time you had sex that was like you would say top 10, and why was it so good? Not me leaving you with a cliffhanger. For the rest of the gay ass sex, go to patreon.com/gayasspodcast. I'm going to be releasing as many of those as I can. The plan is to go weekly or almost every week for now, but you'll have to stay tuned to the Patreon for the Gay Ass Sex Diaries and the other bonus episodes with fun guests there. Again, at patreon.com/gayasspodcast. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode with Parvati. And if you enjoyed, tag us on Instagram. Check out Parvati's course in the description. And I'll see you next week. Bye.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.